You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved. Yeah, commuting sucks. But these guys don't.
My wife, you know, she makes the best lasagna.
She does.
In the world.
She's a great cook.
And that used to be our kind of thing early. The big guy would
She's
be coming
like,
over for the weekend.
This fat pig Hazy. The moose is coming over. I gotta carb load him up.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
All right, race coming up. And we will tee up the game tonight. Leafs Lightning down in Tampa. The Tampa Bay Lightning, the best team in the league. They have been outstanding. They have really not flinched at any point during the season. Not at any point where you're like, all right, here, it's their turn for a skid. They're going to lose 4 or 5. They just always win. I don't watch them play all the time, but I check in on them all the time. And every day I go through the same routine. You're tracking the scores and the standings. And you're like, oh, they picked up another win last night. Oh, they're 14 points up on everybody else. It never stops. Like, that's how good they are, and that's how flawless the season has been for them. And I like this opportunity, though, for Toronto. You know, the whole league would be focused on them because of the Gardner stuff and because of the media attention.
Yeah.
You know, you guys know, but it. You played in different cities. Yeah. When something big happens in Toronto, the whole league hears about it.
But I also think that Ray nailed it the other night, and you pointed it out. Like, the Leafs can go in there and play scared tonight. Because I think there's a lot of teams right now that... Now, the Leafs don't have to play scared for the reason like it sounds. Not scared that, hey, you know, this the big bad Lightning. But scared that their game's not where it's at, and Tampa is rolling along. Like, you don't want to get embarrassed. Like, if Tampa puts up a 7-2 tonight and you're already struggling, like, that just adds on to what's been happening. So I think that's the fear. It's fear's... There should be some fear in your game, but I also think there should be some nervousness, some excitement to play.
I think it's introverted fear. It's
right.
Fear about what you've been doing recently and
Correct.
How you haven't played well
Recency
enough.
Recency bias.
Yeah, the Leafs can beat Tampa. You know, like, it's not like Tampa. This isn't the 72 Dolphins or the 73-win Warriors. Tampa's a great team. They're a very good team. But the Leafs winning tonight wouldn't be shocking to anybody. So... They should feel good about themselves. They can match them when it comes to talent. And I hope what happened a couple of nights ago and the mood in the city, and it galvanizes the team. And they step up for their guy, Jake Gardner, who they all love. And he's been in Toronto longer than anybody else. And they get rocking tonight. And, you know, we discussed it the past couple of days, how Jake Gardner put up a shield for his teammates. And you could argue he put up a shield for his head coach. As well, because Mike Babcock is still, last time I checked, the highest paid coach in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Highest paid coach in the league. And if your team's in a bit of a rut, yes, 90% of that might be on the players, but there's a 10% chunk waiting for you.
Yep.
And Craig Button, our boy. Whew. Someone cashed a check in Craig earlier today on Leafs Lunch.
I think Andy put a quarter in.
Was it? Oh, I don't think it was a quarter.
Oh, sorry,
this was a loony or a toonie or a traveler's check. Because Craig... He's got the spotlight on the man behind the bench. You want to hear this clip from earlier today?
Yeah.
Players are trying to do the things the right way. They're working their asses off, right? Coach's job is to put players in positions where they can excel and play to their potential and their capabilities, right? So, you know, I know something. Leo Komarov didn't help Nazem Kadri, okay, and to any great extent. Nazem Kadri helped himself. So I'm just so sick and tired of all this talk and everything. And Mike Babcock's starting to sound more and more like the Anaheim Ducks, Mike Babcock. Oh, you got to play greasy. You got to play this. The game has changed. It's about speed and skill and thinking and freeing up your players to play. Look what just happened to Man U. They fired their longtime coach. It was a joke. Mm-hmm. And look what's happened since that guy came in and freed him up.
No, I hate to see
anyone... I'm putting the spotlight right on Mike Babcock. That's exactly what I'm doing.
There you have it. What do you make of that fire out of our boy Craig Button?
Wow. He gets worked up. When he's passionate, like, I don't know, because we didn't see it. Was the gavel out? I didn't hear a table
the gavel
in the background.
Was out. I felt like Gord tried to sneak in a quick comment, and it was like, go right back into the cubby.
You.
It's not your time to come out. It's not your time to start speaking into the mic, because Craig is not finished yet.
And you know what? Mike is on the clock. He's the highest paid coach in the league. He did get them in the playoffs for 2 years, but they lost first round.
Yeah.
He hasn't won. What's his record in the first?
It's been nine years, right?
Or it's been a while. Yeah, he does not have a very smooth record in the playoffs in recent years. His last three or four in Detroit and his first couple here in Toronto.
And he's on the clock.
But
you can't just...
He has...
Dig in.
I agree, though.
There's no more dig in. Make it work. Make it happen out there.
I agree.
Well, it's an empty calories comment. Work harder. Right. Of course, work. What, do you think Randy Carlyle's not saying that the last month?
No, you're...
Work harder?
You're right, but I don't disagree he's on the clock. Like, they've executed what they wanted to the first couple years. He wasn't on the clock then because it was hall pass. Hey, there's going to be pain here. See what we're trying to do. We're going to bottom out. We're going to get Austin Matthews, and then we're going to start to build after that. That's what they've been doing. So you sign John Tavares. Like, I think after they lost last year to Boston, I think that's when the clock started ticking. Because now you've got a little bit more experience for some of these young players. You sign Tavares over the offseason. Kyle Dubas takes over. Like, the clock is ticking now, but I think they're well aware of it. Like, this team is now in win this year, win next year, win in a window of 5 years. This is their clock. So
it's
clicking.
Yes,
it's ticking.
This is why you went out and you paid the money to get him.
Spent $50 million on.
And listen, I'm not saying he wasn't worth that money, and he isn't still worth the money. The context of the clip was that Babcock was saying it's time for Kadri to get going because Kadri, he's in a slump. You know, there's a bunch of guys who are in a slump, and I guess he referenced that last year he had Komarov who somehow helped him. I don't know, but Babcock is a guy, he doesn't give you a lot in media scrums anyway. He's not overly poetic. He's not Belichick, but he's also not just going to give you, Sean McVay type post games or, after skate type scrums. But I think it begins with changing up the lines like he's doing tonight.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how much that is going to affect Nazem Kadri. Kadri's still with Marlowe, and I guess he's going to have Kapanen tonight, as long as the lines from yesterday's practice stick this evening.
Mm-hmm.
But, I do think this team, under Babcock, has always done a pretty good job of bouncing back and avoiding big ruts.
Tough situation. Right. They always seem to win that big game. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they won 4-1 tonight.
But
it wouldn't either. And I think Babcock would deserve credit for getting them ready for that. Right. But
A couple years ago when they were trying to make the playoffs, I think the first year Babs was here, they won some big games. Like, they went into Nashville, they won. They went to Detroit and won. And it was just, they're impressive when they're under the gun. So we'll see if it continues tonight.
Mm-hmm. If you ask me, like, in a one-off, winning tonight in Tampa would be a good sign. But I think where Mike Babcock is on the clock is systematically. This is where, last year you were 28th in the National Hockey League giving shots up. They've come down a little bit. You're still in the low 20s now. But if the way your team is constructed, and there's talent up front on the back end, that's all we've been doing right now is dismantling that back end and saying, okay, is it functional? Is it, this player's good? This player's struggling and all that. So how do you work towards the strength of your team? It's making sure that your forwards help out the D, help with the goaltender, vice versa, all of that. That comes down to the coach and systematic play.
Mm-hmm.
And not only systematic play, it's getting those players to play that way consistently.
You got to buy in. So yes. You've got to manipulate the way that they play.
But that's my point. It's easy at the start of the season, they're just blowing the doors off everyone. It's a six spot every night, 6-2, 6-3, whatever, 7. But when the game starts to tighten up, And tonight will be a prime example of a team that is really hardened. Like, Tampa is a tight team. They're talented. They've got everything. But they've also won some playoff rounds. Like, they've been through that type of playoff hockey. They know how to play the system that John Cooper wants. And I'm not suggesting the Leafs don't. But they don't execute it night in and night out. That's where I think the coach is on the clock about, is because down the stretch here, they may have to win a 2-1 game and a hard fought.
Well, at some point, of course you're going to have to do that. But I also think that we're talking about, and Craig was at the end of that clip talking about where the game is and where it's going. And this is where, again, we don't know the conversations behind the scenes.
Right.
But Babcock is an old school guy. He likes to slow it down. He wants to play heavy and cycle and chip and chase and win 1-0. I don't know if that's how Kyle Dubas wants his team to play. I'm not convinced that it is. So who's going to have to flinch first in terms of the way this team is going to be built? You know, because, again, I think Babcock, like, he speaks glowingly of Leo Komarov. Leo Komarov, if he was on this team in the last 7 games, it's not like they would go from losing 5-7 to winning 5-7 because Leo Komarov is here. But I think he likes that version of a player.
Right.
But I don't picture Dubas doing that.
He likes Komarov. He liked Applicator in
Yeah, he likes
Detroit.
Pollock. He likes
those guys. The thing is that those guys, they go and get the puck for the skill guys because the skill guys don't want to do it. And he always claims that Datsyuk said, give me a guy that can go get the puck.
Yeah. Here's
which is fine, but
I'll apply this logic, and I was just looking at it. I don't know. Mike Kelly has that website, The Point. So it's got some analytics involved, and it's got the matchup, the Maple Leafs versus the Lightning. And I was looking at it tonight. There's some really interesting stats. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, Brian, but it's like goals, the Maple Leafs are first. This is even strength, so 5-on-5. Maple Leafs are first, Lightning are second. Scoring chances, the Maple Leafs are fifth in the league at 5-on-5 scoring chances. The Lightning are first. Rush scoring chances, Maple Leafs fifth, Lightning first. Here are the two critical areas that I think that the Leafs, you want to beat Tampa tonight? This is where it comes to systematic play. Cycle scoring chances. The Tampa Bay Lightning, number one in the NHL. The Leafs, 13th. Even strength, offensive zone possession. Tampa, second in the league. Toronto, 13th. That says to me about five-man units, and especially shutting down the cycle, winning those board battles. I think, cryptically, and it's not having Leo Komarov and Roman Pollock, but it's having Zaitsev, it's having Hainsey, it's having everyone involved helping out, shutting down that, and that's the details of the game. That's where you
finding them and selling them to
exactly,
your players.
Exactly.
And we're way into the season, and that is obviously a position of need and a detail that's got to be addressed.
Right.
And it's on Babcock to do that.
It
that's
is.
Why you're the coach. That's literally what coaching is.
Yep.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. We played a clip from Craig. Craig Button was on the lunch, and he's kind of putting a spotlight on Mike Babcock. And you know, he's probably one of the guys who was shielded by all the Jake Gardner discussion over the past couple of days. But with the Leafs losing 5-7 and playing a bit sloppy, you know, what kind of expectations do you have out of Mike Babcock?
Well, the numbers that Jamie just was going over there, I didn't hear at the start, but just the last couple, that made me think right away that it's early in the year. Remember when Babcock said, it's not going to be like this all the time. We're not going to score goals so easily. We're going to have to work harder for our goals. We're going to have to defend better. So without saying the numbers, he was kind of talking about the same thing, that they don't cycle enough, they score too much off the rush. But it was kind of like happy times because they just kept scoring, and it didn't really matter. So, yes, systematically, they can try and hold the puck longer. But sometimes I think you know, your strength is off the rush. Good. Then score off the rush. But if you don't, that's when you have to get to work. And that's when you have to hold the puck. You don't have to be big to cycle the puck. Tampa is not big. They're forward. They do have, you know, JT Miller is a big, strong guy, but Braden Point is not. Yanni Gord is not.
Right.
Stamkos is of decent size, but, you know, he's not a moose. Not Austin Matthews' size. So they can cycle it, but they're going to have to work harder to do it. It's in the defensive end, guys, where I just really wonder if they've got enough to stop the cycle. Like, are they quick enough or strong enough to stop a really good cycle? And I don't know if they are.
Well, how much of that is skill and hockey IQ, and how much of it is just willpower and being like, I'm putting my body out there and I'm stopping this physically. I'm going to stop this because I'm putting my body in the line of the cycle.
You have two options defensively. Scott Niedermeyer, the Jersey Devils were a great example of it. Ken Danico would stop with physicality. Scott Stevens would stop the cycle with intimidation and physicality. Scott Niedermeyer, hockey sense, smarts, speed, skill, Brian Rafalski, same thing, anticipation. Yep. It doesn't matter how you do it. You got to get a bunch of guys that can do it together, whatever way they're going to do it. And they don't have enough, I mean, I don't know if it's enough different ways to do it or enough talent, or it's just not enough, period.
See, Hainsey does it now with his head, right? Like, that's the way he's going to stop a cycle, is that he reads the play. He gets to the right spot, he anticipates it, and he pokes the puck away.
Yeah, stick Zaitsev's length anticipation, that's what he does.
Yep. Zaitsev's got to do it with his feet. Gardner's got to do it with his feet. Riley can do it with his feet and his body. Dermott, I think, has to do it more with his feet, but will grow into using his body. Ozhiganov, more with his body. Can they do it enough against a team that is really, really good at it? And I mean, the last game, they did a fantastic job. They just didn't win. And so that's the type of game they got to look for again. Can they dial it up? I guess we'll find out in a few hours.
Would you expect, you know, the whole Gardner scenario and the booing, is that going to galvanize the group, or do you think they've already kind of forgotten about it by puck drop tonight?
Oh, I don't. See, I don't think there was enough of it. It's not. I don't think it created any more than a couple of days worth of chit chat. Now, if he goes back home for his next home game and it starts getting worse and worse and worse, then you've got something to discuss. But right now it was one period, and you know, it didn't go so well, and the team sucked that night too, and you know, it's kind of seemed like a lot of factors all together. Now, if it becomes something that is a game over game thing, it can, A, galvanize the team, or it can, B, shatter the confidence of a player. And in a way, it really shouldn't matter. Like, who cares? But it does matter. It bugs you. You're like, wait a minute, I'm doing the best I can. Why are they booing the hell out of me all the time? I'm sure that would go through a player's mind. But right now, I think they're on the road. They got two games where they're on the road, and if you get booed on the road, it's a good thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Although there will be a lot of Leaf fans in Tampa and in Fort Lauderdale tomorrow night. With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, just prior to us going off the air yesterday afternoon, the news broke that the NHL and the PA, they couldn't come to terms on a 2020 World Cup in September of 2020. I guess they said they're going to postpone it for now. Obviously, we know that the CBA could lead to a potential lockout or work stoppage around that time. And my impression is that's kind of why they decided, okay, we're not going to make this happen because we can't guarantee we're going to work out this new CBA.
Right.
The Olympics probably a factor in all this from the players' perspective. What was your read on the news that the 2020 World Cup ain't happening?
To me, it felt like they were trying to shoehorn it in as a hopeful bargaining chip. And then when it doesn't, you know, they can't guarantee that they're going to come to a deal. Maybe they found something in their talks that went, oh, you know what? This is a bigger pebble in my shoe than I thought it was going to be. And so one leads into the other, and they're like, you know what? We don't have enough time to do this. They're not going to spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours planning and growing for a World Cup, and then all of a sudden they can't pull it off because there's a lockout. The last thing they need is for the thing to show up like it did last time. Remember World Cup? Next day, lockout. That was embarrassing. And everybody knew it was coming.
Yeah.
I just hope, you know, cooler heads prevail at one point, or at some point, and I don't care if it's the World Cup or the Olympics, but I want international hockey, best on best. I grew up with it. We all did. We've all seen it. We've all grown up on it. You know, it used to be Summit Series, then Canada Cup, and then World Cup, Olympics. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
I enjoy it too much. I like the build-up. I like the debates. I like seeing the best players in the world represent their country. I want to see it. But
you see what the problems are.
Right? I understand of course. I mean, I it's business. I get it. Yeah. Like, it's easy for me to say. It's not my money. It's not my life. But, you know, I just hope once the dust settles, they can finally come up with something. And I don't know if it's back at the Olympics or they fully commit to the World Cup. One or the other. But McDavid should be playing in a Canada jersey at some point.
Yeah, well, 100%. So the real problem becomes, if they have a World Cup, that's where the potential for the biggest financial windfall for the players is in that. In the Olympics, There's just not. And they're not going to get paid to play in the Olympics. Because if they pay the hockey players, then they got to pay the basketball players. But then if you're paying guys, then it's not an amateur competition. And so it can't be. So there's this tug of war. We all want to see the best, man. I love that stuff. I'm just like you said, Brian. It's like, it's awesome to watch that. And watching the World Cup felt like this is a made-up, make-believe thing. And so you either don't go to the Olympics and really make this something, or you go to the Olympics and hope that there you can negotiate some ways into some other revenues to make it more worth your while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope... Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, the Olympics, it holds more meaning because of what the Olympics represents, right? And
right.
The whole country is, you're patriotic and you're in the mood and you're waiting for it. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, the big games start, and that's the pinnacle of the tournament for many viewers, myself included, is the hockey tournament,
yeah.
Both men's and women's. But the World Cup, I'm fine with that. As long as you get rid of the stupidity of the young stars and the Team Europe and all that garbage. And if it's the only international tournament, people will invest in it.
Right.
They'll get into it. It doesn't have to be.
Well, you'll end up having some allegiance to Team Europe or whatever, you know. I thought
that's not possible. It's so stupid.
I know, but
like
over
they were
time,
in the finals. That's what made it more embarrassing. Team Europe got to the final.
I know.
That's how stupid it was.
It was.
Everyone else got beaten. Ended up in the final.
But it's
Chara and
Anze Kopitar. Like, it was stupid.
Yeah, but
so as long as they get that garbage behind them. But, you know, because I think it was The Athletic was pumping out, you know, who would be the projected lineups if the tournament was going on today.
Yeah.
Talk about some wasted effort.
No kidding.
Exactly.
It's a complete waste of time now. But, like, the American team would be loaded. Like, the Canadian team on paper, I still think, would be clearly number one, I think.
Right.
But the Americans, you'd have Matthews, Eichel. Like, that's your 1-2 punch up the middle of the ice. You got Johnny Gaudreau. You got Patty Kane still rocking. Blake Wheeler. Like, that's just the Americans. And then we know the Canadians. The Swedes would be unreal. It'd be outstanding.
The Finns. Like, there's some really good young players in the league represented from all nations.
Right.
Like, let's not forget the young Finns. Like, there's some really good players.
They're always good at international play.
Yeah, so it would be exciting. I just, every time we start talking Laco, I want to pull my hair out because I hate it, and it drives me nuts because I want to get both of those guys in a room, Bettman and Donald Fehr, and say, get your you know what together and let's move forward here and find a way. It's frustrating. I'm not even being selfish from being in the media having to sit here and cover it. It's just, to me, there's enough money for everyone involved. Find a way to cut it up and grow this game. You got another team coming into the league. Yeah, you've got a few organizations that are struggling. You deal with them. Deal with escrow the best way you can. Grow the game.
The other leagues do it. The other
leagues, exactly.
No, like the NBA, they're like, yeah, let's work this out. It'd be stupid.
Work
not
it
to
out.
Play.
Be proactive.
Baseball, yeah, get on it. But we'll see. Leafs Tampa tonight. They're in Florida tomorrow night. So we'll get you in here tomorrow at 5, and we'll break down. Well, it will be a pretty wild evening tonight, I would think, and we'll start teeing up the Panthers game tomorrow.
Yeah, sorry it wasn't very long. I know we didn't have time to get into the 70-pound horse. I saw your tweet about that.
How about that? Someone saved me on Twitter.
Yeah, there was a
70-pound horse?
Yeah, there's a horse out there, a 70-pound horse. So my take wasn't actually as crazy as we thought it was.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I can carry it.
That means a 3-year-old can ride it. Can you imagine if Hayes got on that horse?
Feel like a cartoon.
Yes, it would.
Just flatten it. It would
just go flat. There'd be no intestines or anything. Just flat.
Just do it like a balloon. Just flatten it.
And it would disappear under my boiler. You wouldn't even be able to see any of the remnants of that little horse. That poor horse. Yeah. No, we'll pick that up tomorrow. Don't you worry about it. There'll be something else tomorrow that we'll get into that will be equally as stupid.
Oh, perfect. Can't wait. See you, boys.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's the 2019 Toyota Corolla, the safest vehicle on the road. See for yourself during Maple Toyota's Corolla-thon and get rates from 0% MapleToyota.com. Bill Belichick, I guess, was doing his presser today about the weather in Kansas City.
Was it brilliant?
We might be able to find some audio.
Oh, my God.
And Ian O'Connor will join us, who, you know, he had that story last year about the riff between Robert Kraft, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. We'll get an update on that. How's everything working out in New England? And he's got a cool piece about Mahomes and his dad and just clutch genes. Do we believe in the clutch gene? We'll get you that answer, and we'll discuss it next. All right, Bob McKenzie will be in studio at 6. Get Bobby Mack's take on some of the rumors floating out there about the trade deadline. We're about 6 weeks away from the trade deadline, and I saw Darren Dreger, our Hockey Insider, just sent out a tweet that Pat Brisson, who's the agent for Matt Duchene.
Yeah.
They will continue to discuss his future in Ottawa, and Brisson will talk with the GM of the Senators again next week. Not an unlimited timeline here, but Duchene remains open to all options at this stage.
I already told you what that means.
That I'm with you on this. You said it yesterday. Go ahead. You got the platform. How do you read that?
John Tavares said all last year, you know what? It's my first go around with this. It's a business transaction. I've always said I'd love to stay. And then the follow-up question from everyone should be, okay, well, why aren't you? And by the way, why is this the first meeting between the agent and the GM?
I think there's more. There's been
probably
more.
Been more
because
dialogue.
Because they were in Anaheim the other day, L.A.
But I read this like, open to all options.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I don't.
It's going to come down to this. He's going to want $9 million or $9 million plus, and he's not going to stay. They're not going to pay him.
Well, that's true too, and I wouldn't blame him for that. Use your leverage. Yeah. If you're the player, you should be like, listen, I don't mind sticking around, but I'll take 9.5.
You
over
get
eight.
One crack to go wherever you want. We're anywhere around the league. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you go and sit at a, like, sit in L.A. at Pat Brisson's office and see who wants to. Bring the regime in and see what you can do for me.
I'd be all over that.
Yeah, you got to do it once.
Yeah. Two big games this weekend. One of them in a dome in New Orleans. The weather will be set. We know exactly what it's going to be. It'll be a controlled environment is what they call it. In Kansas City, very different story.
Mm-hmm.
People freaking out in Kansas City about storms and snow and cold and wind.
That's
meteorologists going nuts down there.
Patriot-like.
You know who apparently is not a big fan of a meteorologist?
Who?
Bill Belichick.
Really? I mean, my experience of going with the forecast in this area 2 days before the game, I mean, I'd bet a lot that they're wrong, just based on history, because they're almost always wrong.
Here's the author of Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time, and ESPN senior writer Ian O'Connor. How you doing, Ian?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. Do you ever talk weather with Bill Belichick or what?
I have not, no, and I know to avoid that subject with him, and really most coaches, but they are well-equipped to play in adverse conditions, and we'll see about the Chiefs. The one thing is, I think most people assume that Brady and the Patriots would have the advantage in really severe weather, but the younger player usually handles bad weather better than the older guy. So let's see how that plays out. I remember Eli Manning against Brett Favre at Lambeau. It was the coldest game I've ever covered, the NFC Championship game in 2007-08, and everybody thought Favre was going to win that game because he was used to the frozen tundra, and Eli outplayed him because he was the younger guy, and it looked like Brett Favre was freezing at the end of that game. So we'll see how this one plays out.
As far as Belichick and his interviews in general, do you have any sense of what the motive is? Because I've seen him after he's won Super Bowls, and he'll sit on a set with ESPN guys, whoever it may be, and he's colorful, he likes to talk, and he'll talk football, and it's like, man, that's not... What is the motivation for the kind of attitude in the press conferences leading up to any game?
Well, part of that, usually when he's sitting with Chris Berman, he really likes Chris.
Yeah.
So, and I thought after his comeback victory over Atlanta in the Super Bowl, when Berman's career was sort of wrapping up at ESPN, at least in a full-time context, Bill said some nice things to him on the field on the post-game, which I thought was a really nice thing to do, to sort of recognize an iconic figure in the industry who probably was a little wounded at that time, and Bill knew it. So as far as the press conferences are concerned, it's strategic. He believes when he is at the office 24/7, his only mission is to give out as little information as possible. He believes that the Patriots are in the business of gathering information and never sharing it. So when you ask a question, he's going to be as disagreeable as possible. And he doesn't care that most of America looks at him and says, wow, this is a guy I couldn't deal with and couldn't possibly imagine being friendly with, or that he has a human side to him. But away from that office, away from that facility, he's an entirely different human being, and I wrote about that in my book. And I tried to humanize him, and his friends and associates say that he can be kind and warm and generous and all those things away from football. But when he's at the stadium, that is the Bill Belichick you are always going to get, and it is strategic.
With the author of Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time, you can find it on Amazon. He's also ESPN senior writer Ian O'Connor. And towards the end of last year, pertaining to your book and other reports that were out there, I think ESPN, the magazine, they had the piece as well about maybe some rifts within the organization, specifically with the three, pillars, Robert Kraft, the owner, Bill Belichick, the coach, Tom Brady, the quarterback. As of today, where do we stand, or what's your understanding of how rosy it is or how prickly it is behind the scenes with the Patriots?
It'll never be rosy among the three of them. I think the warm, affectionate relationship is between Brady and Kraft. They live near each other. They have a very close relationship, and that is a transformational partnership. The transactional partnership is Belichick-Brady and Belichick-Kraft. It's almost the dynamic inside the franchise is really Tom and Robert versus Bill, but it's worked to the tune of five championships until it didn't work last year. And the presence of Jimmy Garoppolo on the roster was something that threatened Brady, and he wanted security, and he talked to Robert Kraft about that, and Kraft made it clear to Belichick that, hey, Tom Brady is going to retire a Patriot, so you do what you have to do. And Bill took that as a mandate, or at least something of a mandate, and made the trade he made with San Francisco. I think after Brady considered stepping away from the Patriots and leaving Belichick, as late as late March, sources told me in the book that he was thinking of walking away. I think they're in a functioning place again. It was a very difficult moment in time that partnership had to survive, and it did, barely, because Tom was furious at Belichick in a lot of ways, and that's why he didn't attend OTAs. He's the only starting quarterback in the NFL who did not go to those workouts, and that was a message he was sending to Bill, but I think they're now back in a functioning place.
Where does the role of Rob Gronkowski come into sight here in terms of his, bigger-than-life personality? There's a lot of smoke out there that he could be retiring at the end of the season. The same smoke was out at the end of last season. Long-standing guy, seems really close with Brady. What kind of role does Gronkowski have within all of this?
It's interesting. Physically, he's a beaten-up player. And he's not that old. He's, 29? And yet, he's taken so many hits and he's had so many injuries over the years that he's really a diminished physical player right now, but he's still an effective blocker, and occasionally he'll make a big catch, but he's certainly not the figure he used to be. So I would be surprised if he comes back. There are a lot of opportunities for him, I think, in the entertainment world and maybe pro wrestling, but I could see him being sort of another Schwarzenegger type figure in movies. And so I think that's out there for him if he wants it, and I think he wants to continue playing. I just don't believe his body will let him, at least at the level he's used to playing at. So this could be a farewell run for Gronk, and I do think the Patriots are going to try to run the ball like they did against the Chargers, Sony Michel with well over 100 yards. They need that again in the cold weather. I think Gronk is going to be, like he was against the Chargers, a very effective blocker, and maybe an occasional blast from the pass in the passing game, but it's going to be more James White out of the backfield and Edelman on short and intermediate routes, and a lot of Sony Michel carrying the ball. That's what I think the game plan will be.
With ESPN senior writer Ian O'Connor up on the website, ESPN.com, you can find your latest piece entitled Patrick Mahomes Inherited Clutch Gene from His Major League Dad. His dad was a pitcher, of course. That's a big debate. It's an intangible. Is there such a thing as a clutch gene? Why should we believe that is the case?
Don't you believe that?
I believe
some guys
too.
Have it in them and some guys don't.
I'm totally with that. But you know how in the world of analytics, if it's not on a spreadsheet, then it apparently doesn't actually exist. But take us through this piece.
I think one good example in the NBA is Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm.
His father, Del Curry, if you recall him, he was a great shooter. He's certainly nowhere near the all-around player that his son is, but he had a release like Dan Marino, and he could really shoot it. But what Pat Mahomes told me is not so much he believes that it's in the blood, but more that his son at age 4 and 5, being around great major league players in the Mets clubhouse, it being around that World Series team in 2000 against the Yankees, hanging out some with Derek Jeter in 2001 with the Texas Rangers, taking batting practice with Alex Rodriguez. So at such an early age, he was around so many great sporting figures and big pressure moments in baseball that he got used to it. And so when you wonder, how does a 23-year-old quarterback carry himself with such poise and composure like Mahomes does, that's what his father, Pat Sr., believes is the main factor behind that, is just the way he grew up around big-time athletes, and that really set the tone.
The most recent book is Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. It's on Amazon. It's in bookstores, the whole nine. He is Ian O'Connor, author and ESPN senior writer. We always appreciate the insight and the time. Thank you for doing this, Ian.
Thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it.
You got it. No, I'm totally on board with the clutch gene.
Yeah.
You need it. Like, Tiger Woods has the clutch gene. Like, Michael Jordan had the clutch gene.
Absolutely.
Wayne Gretzky, like, the best of the best. Yes, they're more talented, and they probably put in more work, but they also
their ability to get the job done when it counts is,
right.
It's not normal. It's not, nobody does that.
Yeah, it's something that somehow they were born with it, and it's developed, and they've molded it into having the ability to do something that 99.99999% of people just can't do.
Yeah, like Tiger Woods, if you go through when he was in his prime, those clutch putts that he made, no other golfer in life, maybe Jack Nicklaus, makes those putts.
Like, other people with the clutch gene.
Clutch, exactly.
Jack Nicklaus would
have. Remember the putt he had at the PGA when he was playing Bob May? He had to make this like 5-foot curling putt downhill to go into a playoff. And most people would just like fan it or just drill it left.
They would crap the pants. Well, that's what they would do.
His last major was Rocco Mediate. Remember, he was on 18.
On one leg.
On one leg. He had to hit, that was like a 20-foot putt.
Yes. Well, he sprayed his drive and then laid up in the rough and then chunked it out of the rough to like 15 feet. And it's like Rocco Mediate, they panned to him on TV and he goes, I knew he was going to make it. I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
That son of a gun would not give me one major. He had to make that.
And they played 18 the next day, and Tiger won. That was the last major. What was that, 08 or 09? The Desert Classic is ongoing right now in California.
Phil is on fire.
Phil is 11 under through 16. He's flirting with 59.
He's getting it done.
The lefty.
Let's go to it.
Well, I don't know if we have access. Maybe Zucchino's out there. Our boy Mark Zucchino, he's always behind the ropes and doing his thing, and speaking of golf, and we haven't talked about golf in a long time, but like Tiger's going to be in a couple of upcoming events. Remember, we were talking about Game of Thrones earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Couching is a big part of the program this week because of Championship Sunday, the Leafs play Saturday night, the Raps play...
And the amount of steps that we anticipate you're going to be working with on Sunday.
I'm hopeful I can break some records in terms of just sloppiness and laziness and effectively doing nothing. But I may actually be using this bullet at the wrong time, because the second weekend of April, Game of Thrones, the final season, debuts on April 14th. That happens to be the same weekend as the Masters.
Uh-oh.
Happens to be the same weekend that the Raptors will be beginning their playoffs, and happens to be the same weekend that the Leafs will be in the playoffs. You could have a two-day tour of Masters Saturday, Masters Sunday,
Leafs playoffs, Raps playoffs,
Game of
midgets
Thrones
flying around on dragons to rub and tugs.
That's basically it.
I don't know that.
That's how you define Game of Thrones.
I guess that's
on their Wikipedia page. So
apparently he's the horniest guy of all time.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage, he gets after it.
He's not shy.
He has a great time on that show. Although he's got a bit of a dark history. It's a dark story arc. Very dark.
Somebody said he legit goes to rubbing tugs back in the day.
No, I don't know if there's tugs kicking around, but there's brothels. You know, that's a big part of it. And he gets in there.
He takes a dragon to a brothel.
We don't know. I don't know. I haven't watched enough of it. I've watched two episodes.
I can't even look.
You mentioned the old English. It is difficult. What makes it tough is the worst are the Americans who are putting on the accent. And Dinklage is one of them.
Yeah.
Like, Dinklage, he's a great actor and he does a great job, but it's such a forced accent that is annoying.
Okay.
You know, Littlefinger's another guy.
I just
want to
see him beat up Alf in the boardroom.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Okay. Bob McKenzie's coming up. We're going to have some finalists in here for the Say I Do. We're off to Vegas in less than a month. Maybe. We'll see.
Overdrive, if we're not off air by
if we're not out of jobs. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, Bobby Mack in studio at 6, and a couple of finalists kicking around the TSN compound for the Say I Do contest. We're off to Vegas in about a month. And there's going to be a couple of stragglers joining us here. Who...
Yeah, way to go. You caved in, too. Now we're going to Topgolf.
No, we're not. We don't have to go. Well, listen, don't cater the trip around me, because I have my interests there, too. So it may not be golf, I'll tell you that. I don't go to Vegas to sit there and golf.
I love golfing. You know I love the golf. But I'm kind of the belief that that's a big commitment. You know what I mean?
I don't want to see you and malls and noodles. Like,
how about we roll the bones? Go and sit at a table and get some blackjack going and a little couple whiskeys or something. Like,
that's what I envision. We come in hot.
Enjoying life.
We pay for the whole trip.
Mullen's
coming, first couple of hours.
Isn't Mullen's coming?
Yeah, Mullen's on the trip.
I'd like to see his act.
I never think know. It could like, be debauchery.
Or maybe he's like Bernie Lomax.
Watch Mullen get down there. He knows everybody. They all know him.
Hey, Mullen.
Yeah. Mullen will be the biggest shooter. He is basically Wayne Newton.
His dad shows up.
Larry. Him and Larry.
No tarp on, just geared down naked, running around Vegas.
It could happen.
We've got responsibilities, though. We want people to understand this. We're doing shows down there in Vegas.
Yeah, we have to work.
We're going down there to do shows. The Leaf game is on the station on the Thursday night. We're going to be a part of, hopefully, the pregame, certainly a couple of intermissions.
Does that mean Ray's calling it? Will Ray be there?
No, Ray, I don't think it's a TV game for us. It's a radio game. So Bonesy will be there. Ralphie.
I wonder if there could be...
Henny will be down there. Jonas, maybe.
You know what we have to do on one of our shows? A yes guy, no guy. From Vegas.
Absolutely.
We got to call the Tap Man.
Well, he's going to be doing the pregame
Toronto.
And
will just
so we'll call the Tap Man.
Okay.
We'll do a Vegas-style yes guy, no guy.
And we have to also get our body clocks sorted out, because Vegas is, what, 2 or 3?
I think they're 3 hours.
Yeah, they're a three-pack.
Yeah.
So you're a three-pack ahead.
Going back to the old Hayes show days.
When are you guys coming home? I'm going, leaving Friday night.
Really?
I don't know.
Skiing, maybe Aspen.
You're going to go through Aspen?
Maybe Aspen.
See how John
Where
Denver...
Where the beer flows like wine.
That John Denver, you know he's full of it.
Yeah.
No Kyle, no Kawhi
Salmon
tonight.
Of Capistrano.
Van Vliet, Lowry. No, this doesn't make sense. Kyle's not playing tonight, I thought.
Yeah, I don't think he is. He shut
who
down.
Who gave that update?
Well, I was just reading. Blake Murphy of The Athletic just posted this, but... This is why I shouldn't read Twitter be on the radio at the same
fake
time.
Fake news.
Block. Could be fake news. We'll get you an update on the starting lineup tonight with Phoenix in town. Bobby Mack in studio. Leafs in action. We're rocking. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved.